everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. First week, first full week without football, and we had the NBA All-Star Game, which, I mean, across the board, feels like just like an unmitigated disaster, unfortunately. The All-Star Game in the NBA has rapidly deteriorated. It actually seemed like for like a year or so there, I might be dating myself a little bit because it's 2020, which feels like, I don't know if anyone else feels like 2020 wasn't that long ago, but it was 4 years ago. So I guess it was like a little bit, you know, there's at least some distance between now and then. But I remember right before the pandemic, the All-Star Game introduced, you know, that that final target score to the All-Star Game, and they played really hard and ended up winning on a free throw, or that LeBron's team with AD or whatever, AD ended up winning it on a free throw. And it was pretty cool. Like, it was something new. The players were actually playing and actually trying, and it was fun. And now it's just, over the last couple of years, just completely deteriorated into just nonsense. Even the All-Star weekend, like, it's fine. It just doesn't have that same, like, that same energy and that same feeling it had, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So we're going to talk about that, the decline of the All-Star Game, how it happened, how maybe it can change, even though the NBA's tried so many different things. I think really it kind of just boils down to the players. But we have that, the Nets firing Jacque Vaughn, which is definitely a bit of news that I want to go over. And we'll also talk about baseball. Baseball is back. Pitchers, catchers, everyone else finally reporting to spring training. Giancarlo Stanton looks pretty good, like he lost a lot of weight. We'll talk about him and the Yankees, Juan Soto. And we'll do a little bit, I'll probably just do a little preview on the Yankees just because they're my main squeeze, my main team. But we'll talk about some other baseball things and such. But one of the things definitely that was making the rounds on Twitter yesterday definitely was Stanton and his weight loss. So that'll be something we touch upon as well. Let's start with the Jacque Vaughn news in the NBA. So the Nets, they're not particularly good. The Nets have no real direction, it feels like, in terms of where they want to go. Obviously, going all in, they signed KD, they signed Kyrie. The trade for James Harden, like, none of it works out. Legitimately, none of it works out. It's all a mess. It's all bad. And it leaves the Nets in this scenario, which is so crazy to think about how the Nets have practically gone full circle, like a complete 360 degrees around the league, to where they are now back to that post KG Paul Pierce signing or trade that they did however many years ago it was now, where they traded basically their entire future for an elderly Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett that amounted to like two playoff appearances. And that was it. Like, then they left. KG went back to the Timberwolves for a couple years. Paul Pierce went to like the Wizards and then the Clippers and then retired with like a whimper. And they ended up trading their future to the Celtics, who ended up, you know, recreating their team after kind of struggling along for a handful of years post, you know, KG, Paul Pierce, post that big three of them and Ray Allen, and then even Rajon Rondo, when all those guys left and they were kind of stuck with Isaiah Thomas, which, no discredit to Isaiah Thomas, he was incredible during his run with the Celtics, but, you know, it's just, they weren't that same Celtics team. They were looking to make a splash. They trade away their big guys and they end up getting all these crazy amount of picks in return. That eventually lead them into this team that they have now, right? And the Nets, conversely, right, they traded for KG Paul Pierce. I said they have a little bit of a couple-year run with them. Doesn't really work out because they're old. And then they leave. Now the Nets are left with nothing. They have no draft picks. They have no, star power at all. They end up getting outcasted D'Angelo Russell and a bevy of other players. just kind of a mishmash of throwaways and guys who didn't work out with their franchise. Like, D'Angelo Russell at that time was a good young player, but if people who, whoever doesn't remember, he outed Nick Young in the locker room about, like, a side piece that Nick Young had, and, like, about private conversations and shit. Like, he aired it out to the public, and everyone was like, yo, what are you doing? Like, breaking the sanctity of a locker room like that, especially for, like, personal business, that even if Nick Young was in the wrong, it's still none of your business, and is not, like, something you're supposed to be broadcasting to the general public. But D'Angelo Russell, so that makes basically gives him, he's out with the Lakers. No one wants him there, regardless of his talent level. He was just, it was never going to work there with him because of that, like, breach of trust. So they ship him off for practically nothing to Brooklyn, and he has a career renaissance. He makes his one and only All-Star team. He has an unbelievable year. The Nets are able to make it into the playoffs. They have the infamous Jared Dudley beef with Ben Simmons against the Sixers. And the Nets obviously ended up losing that series because they're just, you know, you're going up against Embiid and Simmons, who at that time, Ben Simmons was an all NBA caliber player. So Ben Simmons and Embiid, and they end up beating the Nets. But that Nets team was really, really fun. D'Lo, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jared Dudley, right? These guys, Jared Allen, when before he was in Cleveland, he was really good on the Nets. They just had, like, a really strong core of, like, players, strong character of players who all really meshed well, really did. They had great chemistry. They executed everything they were supposed to. And they were led by Kenny Atkinson, which, shout out to Kenny Atkinson, who his career, I thought, should have been so high. Like, I think he should have gotten so many opportunities, you know, doing what he did with that Nets team. Generally, as a young coach like that, like, with little head coaching experience, when you have a team like that and then you bring them to the playoffs, essentially a band of hooligans, right? You have D'Lo making his All-Star game and rejuvenating his career. Kenny Atkinson should have been, like, one of the most highly recruited coaches. I have no idea. To this day, I think he's still, I think Kenny Atkinson's still an assistant with the Warriors, which doesn't make any sense to me that this guy hasn't gotten another head coaching opportunity, because he has this moment with the Nets, and then the Nets, they blow it up, right? They trade D'Lo to Golden State. They get rid of a couple other guys, and they end up signing. They put all their eggs in one basket with Kyrie and KD, and they said, let's go for it. And then they fought because KD and Kyrie, they wanted their guy. They wanted a coach that they specifically requested. They fire Kenny Atkinson. They hire Steve Nash. Obviously not the right choice. Steve Nash was a horrible head coach. Kenny Atkinson ends up going to be an assistant with Golden State. He wins a title there. All's well that ends well for Kenny Atkinson. But to this day, still blows my mind that the dude is not, like, a head coach somewhere, because he is, I think, really smart and an excellent basketball mind. And I just, to be, see, all you need to do is look at that 1 year with the Nets and be like, look at how they overachieved. Look at that roster, how many wins they had. They went to the playoffs. Like, you can really point to Kenny Atkinson and be like, this dude is the reason why the Nets were able to sign Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, because he made them, he took the everything after selling the farm for Pierce and Garnett and having nothing, he made them a competitive franchise. He made them competent, and that attracted stars like KD and Kyrie, who were like, hey, we want to team up somewhere. We like New York. We don't want to go to the Knicks. Because the Knicks, to that time, now the Knicks, it's been a complete 180, which we're about to get to in a second. But it's like the Knicks go completely different, where they are now a competent team. But at the time, they're not. You know, there's a lot of James Dolan interferes. What's going on with the front office? What's the Knicks' direction? So even though people said, oh, they were in, like, the Kyrie-KD chase, they really weren't, because Kyrie and KD wanted to go to Brooklyn. And that's where they go. And now suddenly Brooklyn's the hotspot. Their championship aspirations, right? Favorites to win the finals. to win a title. And Kenny Atkinson gets the short end of the stick there, even though he was part of the reason why superstars like Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant wanted to even be there in the first place. He gets the short end of the stick. They hire Steve Nash. That doesn't work out. The entire Big Three experiment after trading for James Harden, it doesn't work out. And now the Nets, after trading all that away, they have a couple of good pieces, right? Cam Thomas is a bucket. Doesn't really do anything else other than score the basketball. Mikal Bridges is a really good two-way player. He's not a number one option, even though he had like a crazy hot end of the season last year. He's not a consistent night in, night out number one option. Cam Johnson, same thing. Really good, like 3-and-D type of guy. Not like a primary scoring option. The Nets don't have a star, like a guy that they could point to and be like, this is our guy. This is our number one guy. And even to D'Lo's credit, like with his ups and downs and constantly being on the trading block, when he was in Brooklyn, he was the number one guy and it worked. Like he was sensational on Brooklyn, dude. And it all blows up. And now here we are with the Brooklyn Nets, basically back to square one where they were after the Pierce and Garnett trade. They have no real star power at all. A couple good pieces, like I said, a couple good players, but as a team, they don't mesh well. They have a ton of flaws. And now in comes Jock Vaughn, who was on the tail end of the Kyrie and KD thing. They end up signing him to an extension. I think it was like a year or so ago. And you thought, okay, well, they're going to let Jock Vaughn kind of lead them to the rebuild and see what they can do, you know, who works where, try and get some pieces, draft like compensation and stuff like that, draft capital, and we'll see what happens. Like we'll let it rip and try and rebuild again. But Joe Tsai can't leave well enough alone. They fire Jock Vaughn inexplicably. I have no idea why this move was made. Zero. Because Jock Vaughn, he's doing as much as he can with basically nothing. You have like no real direction there in Brooklyn. If you're a playoff team, you're a fringe play-in tournament team. And even if you make the playoffs, you're not good enough to win a 7-game series. It's just not going to happen. And to fire him in a state, in the state that you're in, like, I don't really understand what the front office and ownership is thinking with the Brooklyn Nets. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Like to fire a guy when you're in limbo, you have no sense of direction, you have no star players, you have no real assets to even trade for a star player. And it's just, you're in a tough spot. You're in a very obvious rebuilding situation. So to expect anything other than like a 500 ball club, that's asking a lot. And to fire Jock Vaughn after just extending him and being in the position you're in, it just doesn't make any sense at all. And it's just an indication that Brooklyn, under ownership and this leadership, is just in a cycle of like trying to make a big splash and ruining any sense of like continuity that the franchise builds up, because they have their team, they blow it all up for Pierce and Garnett, and after that's done, they kind of reset, build up a little bit better of like a culture and a team that likes playing together. They mesh well together. They're winning ball games. They make the playoffs. The head coach is clearly in a good position. And then they blow it up all again for two superstar players. That doesn't work out. So then they blow it up all again. And then they have a new coach. And then that doesn't work out. And they fire the coach again. And now all of a sudden you have no continuity whatsoever. Everyone's gone. You have different players with a different coach. And it's just kind of a mess. There's no rhyme or reason, it feels like, to anything the Nets are doing right now, which is pretty tough. And this is how the Knicks operated for years, which brings me back to my point that it's pretty funny. It's almost as if, you know, no one New York, there only one New York team can be competent at a time in basketball. That you can't, the Nets and the Knicks both can't coexist. One is going to be poorly run, the other one is going to be exceptionally run. And right now, it's completely changed to where, yeah, the Nets were a well-run organization, and the Knicks really didn't. They were kind of in a transition period, not knowing what's going on. That drives KD and Kyrie to the Nets. Then KD and Kyrie leave. The Nets kind of fall apart, and now the Knicks seem to have it together. They make a bunch of good signings and trades, and they have some great continuity with a good coach and a couple of all-stars. And it's going well for the Knicks. People are excited. It's a lot of people. Kendrick Perkins is on ESPN saying the Knicks are a top five favorites to win the finals, like the entire thing. That's crazy. The complete change in just like 4 or 5 years that's happened is absolutely nuts. And it's crazy to think about. Like, I just really don't understand why the Nets do what they do sometimes, which is what I was saying about the Knicks for like, you know, years and years and years, what every Knicks fan was saying about the Knicks for years. So it's nice to, you know, see another team in the city struggle and the Knicks kind of have it together. Whereas the Nets, again, no, doesn't really seem like they have any sense of direction. Having good continuity, trading away players for two big time guys, and then firing your coach that kind of was able to lead your franchise in the right direction in favor for a guy who has never coached before in Steve Nash. That not working out, firing Steve Nash while you still have your quote unquote big three, hiring Jock Vaughn, that not working out with the players. So you trade away Kyrie and you trade away Harden first, obviously, and then Kyrie and KD after that. Then you sign Jock Vaughn to an extension with a bunch of guys you just kind of got in. It's just a bunch of role players that you got in return for these superstars with no real number one option. Just a conglomerate of players that have no real chemistry or leadership at all. And you just say, hey, go play basketball. And they win a couple games. It doesn't really make a difference. And then instead of just being like, all right, we're going to see what Jock Vaughn can do and lead this team and this franchise into the future and see if we can develop some guys and, you know, maybe we can swing for someone, whatever. No, none of that matters. You fire Jock Vaughn after extending him. It just, you see what I'm saying? Like the overturn, just when you get a little bit of consistency, a little bit, a sense of consistency, the Nets just decide to do a complete overhaul and mess everything that they got going on up. So yeah, that's the development for Jock Vaughn. I thought it was pretty whack. Like for them to just come out of the All-Star break and fire him, that felt a bit weird. Like timing wise just felt very odd to me. I don't really understand that one at all. I really, really don't. But let's some things, speaking of things I don't understand, the NBA All-Star weekend. So the NBA has a lot of fans' dismay. The All-Star game has devolved pretty rapidly since 2020, which that was really the rejuvenating year. A lot of people for years, this has been going on, complaining about lack of effort, literally not even bare minimum defense being played. It's just a bucket for a bucket kind of transition. And it's like whoever ends up missing more in the beginning of the game just ends up losing. No bare minimum effort. And then it changed a little bit because the NBA, they introduced the drafting system where there's two captains and they draft out of the all-star pool for their teams. And then that was fun for a little bit. That kind of was like this cool new niche that the NBA, this wrinkle that the NBA tossed into the all-star game. Then they do the target score thing. And the target score thing was in 2020. It was the first time it happened. You can go watch that highlight on like the final couple minutes on YouTube, whatever. It was intense. Like dudes were actually like playing defense, trying to win the game. It was really, really fun. And there was a reason for that. Everyone was wearing the number 2 and the number 24 because that All-Star game was like 3 weeks after Kobe Bryant died and his daughter Gianna and everyone else that was on board that helicopter. It was like three or four weeks after they died. And People were upset. They wanted to put on a show. They wanted to make people kind of feel better about everything. And, you know, people who were like reeling from that loss, NBA fans, they wanted to put on a show, and they did. And it's really unfortunate that it takes something like that tragic to have these guys try in like an exhibition game, but it was really fun. And then since then, it's just been going downhill again. This year was in Indianapolis, and it was the first year where it was the first in recent years that the NBA, they switched it back, and it was classic East versus West All-Stars. The East won, but the rosters, if you just look at the rosters, like they're completely lopsided. The NBA West team is like one of the greatest rosters ever assembled, like probably 10 Hall of Famers, 10 Hall of Famers on that team. LeBron, Paul George, Kawhi, AD, who else? I'm slipping my mind, but like Booker, Karl-Anthony Towns, like they're not Hall of Famers yet, but a lot of really, really, really good basketball players. Damian Lillard's on the East now. I was going to say Damian Lillard, but Steph, obviously Steph Curry, you know, like this crazy all-star team that they have. And then on the East, it's like guys that you look at and you're like, yeah, they're good players, but they're not like these household generational names that have been around for 10 plus years, like a lot of the guys on the West were. So the guys on the East, it's like Brunson. Since there's no better guard in the Eastern Conference than Jalen Brunson right now, it's his first All-Star game. Not a whole lot of like name power behind Jalen Brunson, right? Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, really good players. They don't carry the same weight. Even Giannis, like, yeah, Giannis is like probably the biggest name there in terms of like accolades. He's the biggest guy there on the East. Damian Lillard, it's cool, but it's just, you look at the pictures and you're like, wow, this is a stark difference. And of course, the East ends up winning because the West doesn't care. You have Luka and Jokic in the West as well, who are like lollygagging the entire time, palling around. They're making fun. They're having fun. Luka's chucking up shots from half court with like 20 seconds on the shot clock. It like literally just they're passing the ball without dribbling to each other up and down the court. And then, you know, pass it for an easy layup. It's cute, but it's like no one wants to sit here and watch this. It's uninspiring. It's not fun. Like people want to watch this game because it's the best athletes in the world competing against each other. And it used to be like a pretty competitive pickup game. That was always the aura of the All-Star game. And that's what people want. They want a competitive pickup game. Yeah, you don't have to be no one is asking you, you know, to stand outside the restricted zone and try and draw a charge in the All-Star game. Although Kyle Lowry, this was back when Kobe was playing too, and, you know, D-Wade and LeBron were still young and everyone was really, really trying. Kyle Lowry's in there drawing charges. Kobe Bryant gave D-Wade stitches in the All-Star game because he hit him with an elbow coming down from a layup, right? Like, it was competitive. It was fierce. LeBron used to be where he hiked up his shorts and he was guarding Kobe. Like, let's go. It was fun. Like, that's the fun competitive nature that people ask for in the All-Star game. And instead, you have guys like Anthony Davis, who's supposed to be the face of the league, who's supposed to be this ultra-competitive dude, who's just like, yeah, it's the All-Star break. People really don't, like, come here and want to compete. That sucks. Like, that is a horrible, if you're the NBA, like, PR, it's just like, that's the worst thing. One of the best young, brightest players is just like, yeah, it's a break for a reason. We don't want to compete. That sucks to hear, man. That's horrible to hear. You had the 3-point contest. Okay, whatever. You have Sabrina Ionescu versus Steph Curry. That was pretty entertaining. The Rising Star Challenge. Even that's changed. So now there's like 4 different teams. Instead of just, and it's not even just 4 different teams. There's G League players constantly being played in those games, which I get is a part on the NBA to really like up the exposure of the G League. But like, maybe go back to just sophomores versus freshmen kind of deal. First years versus second years. It's it's annoying. Like, I don't know. I just it doesn't feel like it's really like a good formula that they got going on right now. There's, you know, Jaylen Brown. People were pretty excited about that because Jaylen Brown was the first actual NBA All-Star to participate in the slam dunk contest since like 2017, which even back then, 2016, 2017, Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, the back-to-backs that they had were sensational. They revived the dunk contest. That was almost eight. That was 8 years ago. A long time ago. Like that was the part where like, oh my God, the dunk contest is back. And even since then, I really thought that there was going to be like an uptick in actual NBA All-Stars participating in dunk contest. No All-Stars participate in dunk contest anymore. Jaylen Brown's the first guy to do it since 2017. And he made it to the finals. He was fine. Mack McClung ends up winning, which Mack McClung, I feel bad for him because it's just like, he lights it up in the G League. Like he really does. He lights it up in the G League. He wants to play in the NBA. He wants a contract. And that's what he's playing for. And instead, the NBA, it's just like, yeah, come up for All-Star Weekend and dunk for us. And that kind of pigeonholes him a little bit to just like this guy who's not good enough to be in the NBA, but he can dunk. He can jump really high and dunk the basketball. So that's like his only exposure that he gets on like a national stage, which kind of sucks. And Jaylen Brown, shout out. He's wearing Terrence Clark's jersey. That was pretty dope. Shout out to Jaylen Brown for doing that. Terrence Clark. Kentucky recruit basketball player died in a car crash before I think he can even play a college basketball game. 18 years old. It was horrible, but that was his boy. So it was cool seeing him wear that jersey. I thought that was dope. And then, yeah, the game itself scheduled for 8 o'clock doesn't tip off till 8:40 because of all the stuff beforehand, which is something I think that is going to be fixed next year. That is, I saw a lot of people complaining about that on Twitter, where it's just like, I was told it starts at 8. The schedule says it starts at 8. So why am I sitting here at 8:45 and we are just now tipping off on a Sunday night, mind you, which that this past Monday was President's Day. So a lot of people were off, but that not everybody was off. So now you're waiting till 9 p.m. on a Sunday to tip off this All-Star game. That was bad. Like, even Adam Silver, it must have been really hard for him to watch that as the commissioner, obviously. But, like, even he said at the end, like, when he was congratulating the East for winning, he was like, the East All-Stars, you scored the most points. Well, congratulations. Like, that to be like... It's just like, yeah, you scored the most points. You guys win. Congrats. Like, whatever, dude. I hope you're happy. I hope you're proud of yourselves. That's really what he sounded like. Like, he looked at everyone, was like, I'm really. I hope you guys are proud of yourselves after the performance, the display that you just put on for everybody else, because it was tough to watch. And he even said, like, I wish we had a more competitive game, but it sucks, man. It really sucks. It's so stupid that it's like you have all these players and none of them seem to really care. Like, I understand it's an exhibition game. Again, no one's asking you to stand outside a restricted zone, take charges, you know, dive for loose balls. No one's asking you to do that. Like, just run it like you would run a pickup game. Why are we... You know, Anthony Edwards is participating. That shouldn't have been allowed. Anthony Edwards doing the skills competition with his left hand and just treating it like a complete joke. Scotty Barnes should not have been out there either. It was just like, that's such an embarrassment. Like, it's such a disrespectful thing to do where it's like, yeah, I understand for Anthony Edwards, it was probably fun to like mess around and do something like that. But like, fans are there to watch you like, do cool things, you know, just try. It's a skills competition, dude. Like, you don't have to put in that much effort, but at least try. And to do the entire thing with your left hand and make it kind of a farce is not a good look at all for him or for the league in its popularity. It takes a hit, you know, and then you have guys like Luka and Jokic, who I touched on, like they're just completely messing around the entire time. Like it's a buddy cop movie for them. They're messing around. They're not trying. It's tough because you're the NBA, and the NBA probably feels this too, where it's like you're in a position right now. You're entering a crossroads, a transformative time in the NBA. You have the new CBA stuff kicking in after this year, which is going to shake up the landscape of a lot of teams, I think. And then you have the new television contracts coming in after this year. So what are we going to do in terms of streaming, cable, whatever, right? That's something they're thinking of. And all your hallmark marquee star players that you've been riding for the past 10, 15 years are creeping up on retirement. And when they go, you're going to be stuck with guys like Jokic, Doncic, Anthony Edwards, guys that are young and supremely talented, but just simply do not give a shit. Like, they care about winning actual basketball games. They care about winning playoff games 100%. But like, you know, Jokic is openly out in he's out in public telling the media, like, yeah, when it's not the regular, basketball's a job, when it's not the regular season, I don't really care about it. You know, like I show up, I play basketball. And then other than that, like, I want to go home and do other things I'm interested in. All right. Which Anthony Rendon, it's pretty funny, the contrast there, but that's because Anthony Rendon doesn't play. Nikola Jokic is a 2-time NBA MVP. So that's the difference there. We're getting to Anthony Rendon. I promise you we're getting to Anthony Rendon. But yeah, Jokic is like, I want to be on my farm with my horses and my family when I'm not playing basketball. And then when it's the season, like, I'll try, I'll give my best effort, I'll put up my stats, I'll help us win games. He won a championship. Like, he's done everything, you know? And Luka, like, for as talented and as great as he is, his team hasn't really been able to do anything in the playoffs. You know, aside from one year, they got to the conference finals, but they've been struggling to kind of support him and really make consistent deep playoff pushes. Kind of a thing that's up in the air with him, if he's going to stay in Dallas or not, but doesn't care about the All-Star game at all, right? Completely messing around. Anthony Edwards, this guy who's being hailed or was being hailed online as like this MJ killer instinct type dude. He's next up. He's the next face of the league. He can seize it. This is his. And just completely like sidetracks that conversation by just simply making a farce of everything he was in, which sucks. It's tough to look at that. And, you know, you have the NBA in-season tournament, which was a huge success, by the way. I would peg the in-season tournament as a huge success for the NBA. You had the Lakers and everyone on that team. They get $500K. It's a nice cash incentive. You got good competitive basketball in November to December. It was a lot of fun. You get the final in Vegas. Everything's great. Like, it really, I think, worked out to the best it could have. You get a couple guys, like the way they marketed it, the way the television studios marketed it. It was a good thing. It was a good thing. It showed a lot of promise, and it's definitely going to be something I think that gets pushed even more next year. But as of right now, like, here's the thing with the NBA that's tough, is because the All-Star game happens the Sunday after the Super Bowl. It's a big act to follow, and you're going to have a lot of people watching, because now it's like, football's over, time to really lock in on basketball and the NBA and pay attention to that. And the first exposure you're giving people who are like now really ready to lock in, where, you know, people might have followed throughout the season and whatnot, but they're waiting for the NBA to end. I mean, the NFL to end, really, right? Because the NFL kind of runs America. So you finally get to this juncture where you're like, football's over. I'm finally like, can decompress. Let's watch the rest of the NBA. We'll watch the All-Star game, get into the rest of the last push of the NBA season and into the playoffs, and you're exposed to that product, that All-Star weekend, it's kind of demoralizing and a total turnoff. So I have seen a lot of suggestions on Twitter. I thought the easiest one is to just offer like a cash prize to the All-Star winners, you know, 100K to everyone on the team. Everyone who wins the All-Star game gets 100K. Now, they'd have to be 500 because the in-season tournament's kind of like, you know, stretched out several games that you have to play in order to qualify, and then the tournament style bracket and all that kind of stuff. Like it's a more drawn out process, which is that would equate, you know, more money at the end for the champ for getting to the championship and winning the championship in season tournament game. But for the All-Star game, there's got to be some type of incentive, because right now, and there are a lot of All-Star games that suck. Don't get me wrong. Basically everyone except for the MLB. The MLB All-Star game is the only one that's worth watching. Football, the Pro Bowl used to be electric. Like the Pro Bowl really used to be like a game where the best players in the league lined up against each other and played football. And it was crazy. Like you had shout out Sean Taylor, knocking people out like in the middle of the Pro Bowl. Like it really was a game where they really used to play it. Now it's kind of like arcade games. You know, they play flag football. They do the throwing accuracy challenge. I don't know if they did dodgeball this year, but they did it last year, I'm pretty sure. Like different fun games that these players can participate in. And it's just kind of like whatever. That is the one that makes the most sense to me, because as a professional football player, I do not blame any of them for not wanting to suit up on pads and go and hit each other and tackle each other and play a very physical, rough and violent sport. As an exhibition game, that means absolutely nothing. I do not blame them one bit for not wanting to do that. But for basketball, like basketball is basketball, dude. You can play that anywhere. If you have a ball and some type of ring or like crate, basket, whatever. You can play basketball in a lot of places, dude. And it is really easy. Like it is not difficult to give a competitive game of basketball. No one is asking you to go at 110% like you would in a playoff game or anything like that, or even in a regular season game effort. But at least try a little bit. There's no reason why these guys should be standing around with their hands on their hips as guys just run right to the basket for a casual layup. Like, give some type of defensive effort, some type of challenge, something that's going to make people interested in watching the best players in the world compete against each other. It's so ridiculous that it's like such a big ask in the NBA. And then the NHL All-Star game, I don't really know what people's opinions are on that. For me, the biggest or the weirdest thing I think with the NHL is just when it was just like on a February 3rd, a Saturday at 3 p.m. Like in the middle of the day, 3 p.m. on a Saturday, just the NHL All-Star game. Like I didn't really like the format was weird. There was a bunch of different teams for the actual format of the All-Star game. There was different captains and different teams. I didn't really understand everything that was going on. It just like the skills competition and like the NHL, that like hardest slap shot, fastest time around the ice. Like that's cool. I like all that. I think that's dope. But for the actual All-Star game, it's like, whatever. It's on a random Saturday at 3 p.m. It's not really like this marquee thing. At least with the NBA, they spread it out. It's like All-Star weekend. It's supposed to be this big thing. You have a primetime slot the weekend after the Super Bowl. It just, everything about the NBA All-Star game should be important to the NBA, to its players. And I feel like that's where we kind of get away from things, is that players in the NBA used to understand that they were essential to the actual product of the NBA. And, you know, they wanted the NBA to succeed. The NBA was trying to grow its presence with David Stern, right, leading that charge, and its reach and its presence. And now the NBA is at an all-time high in terms of like reach around the world. And yet somehow the product feels worse. It's bizarre. You know, that Let me look at this stat. Let me read the stat. What that is, I saw the other day on Twitter, and I will credit whoever it is in a second when I find it. It is a disturbing stat. Kirk Goldsberry, big time NBA guy. And he, offensive efficiency, he tweeted this out. The 73-win Warriors from 2015-2016, the 73-win Warriors, arguably the best team of all time. Obviously, people want to throw up that Chicago Bulls team as well. But most wins in a regular season of all time. That team would currently rank 21st in offensive efficiency this season, below the Toronto Raptors, who are 19-36. A bad Toronto Raptors team has a higher offensive efficiency than the 2015-16 73-win Golden State Warriors. Explain. How does that make sense? That's because scoring is at an all-time high. Defense is at an all-time low. That's just the way it is. Whether you want, I don't know if you want to blame the refs and the rules. Pace of play, like, is just at an all-time high. People are shooting more. They're making more. Like, it is absolutely insane to me that these, you can look back at these teams not too long ago. You know, that team was, that's 8 years ago, 9 years ago, that team was. And now it's like they would be 21st in offensive efficiency. That's like completely bizarre to me. And it should be alarming to a lot of other people that this is the way that offense and gameplay is trending in the NBA, because it's already a very loud narrative. It's already a very loud narrative in the NBA that there is no defense being played. It's uncompetitive regular season games. You know, guys not trying, taking possessions off. And the NBA, I think they're just trying so hard to combat this, right? Like they implemented the 65 game regular season rule for league MVP, all NBA teams, accolades and that. And I think to a degree that has worked. I think if you're complaining about that, I need to know what your take was beforehand. Because if I find out your take beforehand was these guys can't be resting during these games, and now all of a sudden you're complaining about the 65 game, I can't take you seriously, because it's one or the other. You can't have both. I was complaining about star players sitting and rest and all that kind of stuff. I like the 65 game rule. If you get screwed over because of it, I don't really feel that bad. Asking to play 65 out of 82 games really should not be that difficult. If you suffer an injury, you suffer an injury. It happens. You probably, if the 65 game rule didn't exist and you suffered that same injury, you probably weren't going to win that award anyway. You know what I'm saying with that? So it's like, so I 100% understand why people are talking about the NBA the way they do, because there are a ton of problems and a ton of problems that are going to be manifesting very soon. Again, the face of your league, LeBron and Steph and Kevin Durant, those three guys specifically are dudes who have been at the forefront of the NBA as the face of the NBA. LeBron for 23 years and or 22 years, whatever it is. And Steph Curry for like 17 years now. And Durant, the same thing. Durant's on like year 19. So you have, you know, LeBron on year 21. KD's on year like 17. And Curry's in his like 15th season. Like, all these guys have been around for a really long time. They've all been the face of the NBA. They've all won championships. They've all won MVPs. They've all been all NBA multiple times, like first team multiple times, obviously. Like, they are the three most, probably most profitable faces of the NBA for like the past 10 years, easily, at minimum. And it has been a great ride with them, but now it's starting to come to an end. Like, LeBron, we know he's nearing retirement. Obviously, he's not going to play till he's like 50, although I wouldn't be surprised. But not lack of production, just age. Obviously, eventually he wants to hang it up, and that's coming soon. Same thing with Kirk. Curry's 35. You know, Durant is 36. Like, they're all getting up there to the point where retirement is something that is going to happen sooner rather than later. So what does the NBA do when they're gone? Because they have been carrying the league. And right now, the biggest faces of the league are guys that don't necessarily care about any of that stuff. They don't care about, you know, they don't care about being the face of the league. Luka does not care. Jokic does not care. Anthony Edwards kind of felt like he was being set up to be that guy. Completely, I think, really probably rubbed Adam Silver the wrong way, the way he participated in All-Star Weekend. So that's not great either. Who else? Like Embiid? Joel Embiid's not, he's just not that, he's not that kind of guy. It's just not, like, he hasn't been that kind of guy to be, like, the face of an entire league. It's just not, I think he messes around too much. You know, the process. People look at him in a certain way, too, because of his playoff performances the past couple years. So it's just not something I think that's going to be a viable option either. So who is it? Because those are four really, really good players. Two of them are MVPs with Jokic and Embiid. And the other two are MVP caliber. Luka might win one this year. We'll see what happens with the Mavericks. But they're all really, really good. And it's like, who is it, right? Like, who can be the guy that's next up? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, maybe? He's kind of quiet, though. You know, he's not, like, he doesn't have that personality to really be the face of a league. You know, you need someone who, like, Anthony Edwards has the personality, but he just, is that effort there? Again, I think he rubbed Adam Silver the wrong way during All-Star Weekend. I think Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic rubbed Adam Silver the wrong way. I think a lot of people rubbed Adam Silver the wrong way this weekend. Let's be real. So it's tough. It's a really brutal situation to be in for the league that is in a pivotal moment with TV contracts and the future of how people are going to be able to consume the NBA. Is it going to be on cable? Is it going to be on streaming? What's that future look like? And it's brutal. Like it's a brutal situation to be in. And it's gotta be something has to be figured out. You know, you probably still have a couple years to do that with Durant, Curry, and LeBron still hanging around for at least another year or two, I would think. LeBron will probably be the first to go. Yeah, man. I think everyone's eyes opened this All-Star weekend. It was particularly bad this year, which is really unfortunate for the state of Indiana, because it's a great basketball state, man. Like, college basketball, the NBA, they love their Pacers. They love their Hoosiers. It's a great, great basketball place, city, and state. And to get that kind of, like, effort and that kind of show out from these players who very clearly did not care and did not even pretend to try, it sucks. You know, you can't be reliant on LeBron, like a 40-year-old LeBron James, to make the All-Star game competitive. It's the All-Star game being competitive is all up to the young guys. The young guys who don't have a lot of miles on them, they're just getting their first crack at it. You know, Tyrese Halliburton lit it up. Karl Anthony Towns scored like 50 in the All-Star game and they lost. Like, people were making fun about that. It's like, wow, it's a normal Timberwolves game. but it's like, it's up to the young guys who don't have a lot of miles on them, who are getting their first or second appearance, you know, to really make it a show. Like, they have to come together and be like, hey, this is our time to come in as the new guys and play good basketball and play hard basketball and show everyone, like, hey, we're next up. We're the next faces of the league. The old guys are here and maybe they're the starters, but when we get our shot, we got to actually play. We got to try. We have to really get it going. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, his first All-Star game, he put up like 31. He put up a normal stat line, which I thought was hilarious. He puts up literally every night. It was pretty funny. It was like 31, 7, and 4 on like really high efficiency shooting. What else, man? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm starting to talk in circles now because it's just so glaringly obvious how the problems are plaguing. These problems are plaguing the NBA, and it must be frustrating because it feels like the only real answer to combat this is to just ask the players to actually try. That fixes everything. If the players actually tried at least 60% effort in the All-Star game, that would wipe away the dunk contest being bad and no actual All-Stars participating in it. The skills competition being bad, like, it would wipe all of that away if you just knew that at the end of all of it, you would get a competitive pickup game between the best basketball players in the world. It would wipe away everything else. Wouldn't matter. Also, for the slam dunk contest, that's like your marquee Saturday night event. That might have to be a cash prize as well. That might have to be like 10 grand or something like that, which that doesn't really move the needle for a lot of people. So maybe like 50 grand. There has to be some type of incentive, I guess, for each, the 3-point contest, that's just shooting the basketball. It's low effort. If you're a good shooter, you can participate and have fun and like put on a show for people. Cause if you get hot, then it's like, whoa, we made like 15 in a row. That was crazy, you know? But with the dunk contest, there is, you know, obviously a high level athleticism required and also creativity that I guess a lot of people don't have. But it's like, I hate it. I think that it needs to, you need to be able to convince some of these guys in some way, shape, or form to participate in the dunk contest. It needs to happen. Which, to be fair, I think LeBron really started a lot of that. When he was young, first stint Cavs LeBron, when he was young, he teased about being in the slam dunk contest a few years in a row. And people really thought that he was going to do it and were really excited about that. And he never did. And I think that kind of set a lot of star players on that path where it's like, well, LeBron didn't do it, so why would I? Because a lot of all-star, it used to be exclusively all-stars were able to do it. If you weren't an all-star, you weren't doing it. And it was like this thing that a lot of people were hyped about, you know? And then the strike kind of killed it it almost killed it. Vince Carter brought it back. And throughout the 2000s, it was pretty good. If I remember correctly, it was pretty good. And then you get to like the 2010s, you start getting weird. Post Blake Griffin jumping over the Kia, you start getting like, they did that. I remember one year, it feels like a fever dream. John Wall was in it with a bunch of other people, and there was like a team-based slam dunk contest. It was bizarre. You're at the point like Jeremy Evans on the Utah Jazz is like in the slam dunk contest. You know, no disrespect to Jeremy Evans, but like he has one of the coolest in-game dunks I've ever seen, though. Shout out Jeremy Evans. But yeah, it's things like that. Like, it just started snowballing to where LeBron didn't do it, so the best players aren't going to do it. The best players aren't doing it, so I'm not going to do it. And now it's like no all-stars do it. So you have to get G League guys to come up and fill out, you know, a pool of players. It's crazy. It is literally, I don't understand. To me, like, I get Anthony Edwards being like, yeah, no one really wants to come here and compete. You're on a break. All right, dude, you get paid to play a game. That's always my bottom line. Like, you get paid to play a game. You are at All-Star Weekend with all these other players. Yeah, you can mess around a little bit. But for the 5 minutes of the skills competition that is required of you to participate in, that you elected to participate in, for 5 minutes, maybe just try 75% for the skills competition. You know, try and make the passes on target. Try and get through the obstacle as quick as you can. It doesn't make any sense to me why you wouldn't want to try. You know, not 110%, but just make it, you know, entertaining. Like, just show you care a little bit. Because no one likes the person who is very much acting like they don't care. No one likes that person. You're not cool. You know, it's not funny. It's just kind of like a waste of time. You're wasting everybody's time doing that. And it sucks to sit here and be like, this is what it's come to. Because when I was like 13, 14, 15 years old, I watched every event every year of all NBA All-Star Weekend. It was the single best All-Star Weekend growing up. I loved the MLB one as well, obviously the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. But yeah, I just all type of All-Star games across the board, again, except Major League Baseball, they are not enjoyable. They're not. And baseball is awesome because the Home Run Derby is very sick. You get a lot of the best power hitters, big time hitters in the league participating in the Home Run Derby. Everyone loves it. It's great competition. It's good television. It's a little worse now because Chris Berman doesn't do it anymore. Back. Now that that's gone, it took a little bit of a hit. You can't even deny that. But it's still fun to watch. And then the MLB All-Star Game actually used to be, which I remember seeing someone in like a comment section be like, oh, the winner of the NBA All-Star Game, that conference should have home court advantage for the finals. That will instill a competitiveness in people. And then everyone was like, well, if someone on the East wins the All-Star, if they win the All-Star Game and then the East loses, it's like, I helped you have home field or home court advantage. What, like, all right, dude, just win the series and then you can get home court advantage. I don't understand the problem. Like, the MLB used to be like that for years, years and years and years. The MLB All-Star Game used to dictate who would have home field advantage in the World Series. It was really, 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 really important. And it was really fun. It was dope. Like, everyone wanted home field advantage, and it was just kind of understood that, like, yeah, if you have home field advantage, if you win the pennant, you'll have home field advantage. So just the only time it became a problem, I forgot what year it was. I think the reason why they changed is because there was one year where the NL team or the AL team, I think, the NL team might have had a better record than the AL team by like a pretty significant margin. And the AL had won the All-Star Game, so they had home field advantage, and it was kind of like, this isn't fair. So they did away with that. But baseball in itself is a very competitive sport. You can't really half-ass baseball, because like, you got to get through it. You got to get three outs every half inning. So you got to like try, right? The pitchers just can't be out there throwing meatballs down the middle of the plate and watching these dudes tee off, over and over and over again. Like the All-Star, that's what the Home Run Derby's for, right? You don't need that in the All-Star Game. So it's great because the MLB, you have so many pitchers on the roster for the All-Star Games. You're just able to kind of rotate. All you need to do as a pitcher, you roll out there, you throw three innings, or you throw an inning, a half inning, three outs, and then you're off. You're done. Your night's over. Same thing with the players. Like the starters play for like two, maybe three innings, and then you start rotating out other guys from the bench, and you get to see all these different excellent baseball players play in the same game on the same field together. And it's pretty competitive. Guys are trying, you know, they want to win. It's fun. Like the MLB All-Star Game is fun, and that's what you want to see from an All-Star Game. So if baseball gave the same effort as the NBA players did, it would be like completely ridiculed over and over and over again. And I understand the MLB nowadays doesn't hold the same weight and reach as the NBA or even the NFL does, but it's still a sport that a lot of people care about. And they're still putting out a pretty good product year after year, despite Rob Manfred not being a great commissioner. But it is something that I look forward to. And that's something that I used to feel the same way about for the NBA, and now I don't, and I'm sad about it. So I whether it's a cash prize or some type of advantage going into the second half of the season, I literally have no idea what the NBA could implement. I feel like if you just start throwing money at things, that might work in the short term. But then after that, it's like, you know, all these all-stars that are there, most of them have their big contracts already. So an extra 50 to 100 grand is not going to cut it. I don't really think paying them 500 grand a pop like they do for the in-season tournament is a viable option either. But yeah, man, it's just like, you can't just keep throwing money at the problem because that's only a short-term solution. So they'll figure it out, I'm sure, but it's definitely something that I know is a huge concern for the NBA moving forward, because not having a mediocre All-Star weekend is one thing. Having one that is like flat out embarrassing to the point where like people are calling it out on the internet for being an embarrassment, that is a big time no-no. Like, the NBA does not want that, because now you're actively hurting your product. Your players are actively hurting the product they are playing for. So this entitlement of being like, we don't have to try, it's the All-Star game, no one wants to try, so we're not going to, that mentality's got to change. And there's not really any viable option to change it. Like, actually have a first hand encounter in like changing that, there's really nothing you can do other than just like hoping that a flip switches in the players and be like, okay, let's actually try for the All-Star game. Yeah, I mean, you can subject the guy. I mean, I don't know. Cause if you subject the guys to, you can't subject them to fines for like not playing. It's all exhibition stuff. And if you're submitting, if you're subjecting them to fines, no one's going to want to play. So that's not an option either. That just kind of popped in my head real quick. And I was like, nah, that's a horrible option. That's not going to work. All right, we talked a little bit about the MLB there with the All-Star game. So let's get into baseball. The MLB is back, baby. Everyone reported for spring training. And the two big stories from yesterday, from the first day of spring training, Giancarlo Stanton's weight loss and Anthony Rendon's comments about how baseball is not his top priority. Yes, that is a real quote from a real professional baseball player who gets paid tens of millions of dollars a year to play a game. So we'll start with Rendon, because that pissed me off. That got me really heated, man. I just think it's so tone deaf and so obnoxious to be a guy who is one of the highest paid players in the league, by the way, to just sit there and be like, yeah, baseball's not my top priority. It's never been a top priority. My family's my top priority. You're not special because of that, Anthony Rendon. Everyone's family is their top priority, okay? That doesn't make you special. That doesn't give you an excuse to sit there and talk about how much you don't care about playing baseball. And now I know it really boils, like, we really have no idea exactly how much effort Anthony Rendon puts into baseball. But here's what we can look at. This is a guy who signed a massive contract, and excluding the shortened 2020 season, over the past 3 years has played in a combined 148 games in 3 years. He does not play baseball because he is always injured. Now, don't get me wrong, injuries happen, and I understand that. But when injuries happen and you're not on the field, and then you come out and the first thing you say to reporters is, first of all, he said, I don't want to be talking to you guys at 7 a.m. Newsflash, Anthony Rendon. I don't think those guys want to be talking to you either, because they know how you are. So he tells them that. Real great. Yeah, real stand-up guy. Second of all, he's telling people to their faces, I do not care. I'm going to put in the bare minimum effort. Baseball is not my top priority. It has never been my top priority. He's also on record from years ago, even back when I think when he was on the Nationals, where he was just like, yeah, I don't watch baseball. Like, I don't, when I don't have to play baseball, I am not paying attention to baseball. And I'm not, it's not something I care about. It is insane to me that this dude is basically out there acting like he's just a regular accountant on like Wall Street. Like this is just a day job. You know, he puts on his jersey the same way guys put on their shirt and ties in the morning. That's certainly a way to look at it. And conversely, you can look at Nikola Jokic, who is basically saying the same things where he's just like, you know, basketball's a job. When I'm not like, when it's not the season, I'm home, I'm doing my hobbies, I like my horses, like I'm just chilling with my family, and that's what I like to do in my off time. But the difference here is that Nikola Jokic plays every game, and he's a two-time MVP and an NBA champion. So Anthony Rendon, he was playing all the time. Like if he said this when the Nationals, it was fine. Everyone kind of laughed it off like, haha, it's so funny that Anthony Rendon is so good at baseball, yet he doesn't care. But now you don't really play. And when you have played, you've kind of struggled with the Angels. So why do you feel the need to constantly shove it down people's throats that you don't care? I don't understand why this is something that you're like tripling down on and doubling down on. And to say like, yeah, my family, you know, they're the most important thing. Everyone's family is the most important things to them, dude. And like, that doesn't make you the exception. Everyone's got people they got to feed and take care of. And that's the way the world works. It's not just you. So to get paid, to be one of the highest paid players in the league who is injury prone the last 3 years and hasn't played, and then to turn around and the first thing out of your mouth in spring training is, yeah, baseball is not a top priority to me. That is such a bad look. It pisses people off. And then he doubles down and says, I don't care what fans think about me. Saying like, you can't make everyone happy, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, it's just so tone deaf. You know, it's something that's like, do you have any idea the position you're in? Just show some like humility, right? Like to sit here and like, that's a great mindset to have. It's not the mindset people want to hear though. Like just go out there and say, you know, I'm ready to try and stay healthy and contribute to winning baseball for the LA Angels. That's all you had to do. And instead it's just like, yeah, you know, I'm here. I'm ready to play, you know, but baseball hasn't really been a top priority for me. It never has been. So I'll take it one day at a time. We'll see how it goes. That's your response. That's where you're telling people the first day of spring training. That's what's blowing my mind about this with Anthony Rendon. It's like people have these conceptions, these thoughts about you, right? They've heard the quotes before and everyone kind of knows that this is the person you are. This is like your disposition. And instead of coming out and just giving generic answers, you know, being like, I'm gearing up for the season. I worked out in the off season. You know, I tried to get my body in better shape to stay healthy and contribute to winning baseball for the Angels and just ready to get back out there and start playing again. Instead of saying that, which is literally, it's such an easy answer, dude. It's so easy to just like, just say the generic stuff. It's so easy. And instead, the first thing out of his mouth is, this is not a top priority for me. I'm here because it's my job, but it's not a top priority for me. You get paid tens of millions of dollars a year to play a game that you were gifted enough to be good at. And you just tell everyone that you don't care. You're going to do the bare minimum. It's like so, so, so disrespectful to the fans, to ownership, to his teammates. Like, it's just really, it's horrible, dude. It's horrible. Like, this is really supposed to be the guy that the Angels signed to give Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout some help. And he's done nothing. And then he's saying all of this, coming back into spring training, right out of the gate. This isn't like in the middle of the season. This isn't whenever. This is literally the first or second day of spring training. And this is what he's making headlines for. It has to be infuriating if you're an Angels fan. It's infuriating to me. And I do not care about the LA Angels in terms of like success and failure. Couldn't care less. And it's just like, here he is just like spewing out his thoughts about like, you know, family first, as if that's not every single athlete on the planet. Isn't like my family comes first. Obviously your family comes first, but that's not like an appropriate answer, dude. You understand? Like, it's not an appropriate answer because everyone has that. It doesn't give you an excuse to be, you know, like aloof with your job or regardless. Some people are out there seem to think that he was being sarcastic or facetious or whatever. And you can, you know, tag whatever word you want onto how you think he was and what he actually is. And this is his exact quote. "If they want to make me out to be a certain type of person because I want to see my family more, I mean, that's fine. They don't know me. They just know the surface level. Everyone's going to have their opinion. You can't make everybody happy." The surface level you are showing people is that you are a jerk. That may be true, Anthony Rendon. You know, that might be a thing where it's like, yeah, you're right. Not everyone knows you. Fans don't know you on a personal level. We get that. No one's blaming you for wanting to see your family more. Everyone does. But the surface level you're talking about that everyone knows and everyone sees, that surface level is not pleasant. It is not a pleasant person. It is not a enjoyable baseball player. So that surface level that you are projecting to everyone is incredibly unlikable. So it's crazy. It really, really got me heated. Obviously, you could tell that this is like the first thing that comes out of his mouth when everyone already knows, like, this is who you are. This is what you do. This is how you've been the last couple years. And to like double down on it and really show people why you're just like so unlikable right now is crazy. And then to play like the "I'm actually a family man" guy. I'm a family guy, but to be like, that's the reason why I'm like this. That doesn't draw any sympathy from anybody. Be like, oh, well, I understand if he just wants to be a family man. You know, he wants to be with his family more. I can get that. I understand that. Like, no, everyone wants to. That doesn't make you special. What makes you special is how good of a baseball player you are. And you're not even doing that right now. So what, like, there's no reason to be the kind of this. These statements, there's no reason for them to come out of your mouth. None at all. It's mind-blowing that this is how he elected to start a year. It is so easy. It is so easy to look at the media and just give out the same nonsense that everyone else does time and time again. It is so easy. This is the exact transcript of the interview. This is who interviewed him. I guess it was Sam Blum interviewed Anthony Rendon. He's the Angels writer for The Athletic. He goes, "Last year you said you'd consider retiring. What's your mindset now?" Rendon says, "My enthusiasm has been the same since I got drafted. To be honest with you, I was actually deleting old emails. So I'm going back and deleting old emails. And I emailed myself a pros and cons of why I wanted to stay in the game. This was back in 2014. My thought process of the game has not changed since then. I keep making it this long." Sam goes, "How does your pros and cons list compare to 10 years ago?" "It's a lot different. I'm married. I have 4 kids. My priorities have changed since I was in my early 20s. So definitely my perspective on baseball has been more skewed." Is it still a top priority for you? "It's never been a top priority for me. This is a job. I do this to make a living. My faith, my family comes first before this job. If those things come before it, I'm leaving." Is it a priority? "Oh, it's a priority for sure because it's my job. I'm here, aren't I?" Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, come on, dude. I'm here. What else? What more do you want? I showed up. That's what he's saying. What more could you possibly want from me? I'm here. Do you want to be here? I don't want to talk to you guys at 7 a.m. or whatever time it is. Do you want to be here playing baseball for the Angels? So many opportunities to just, for him to just be like, yeah, I'm excited to get back out there with the guys and to stay healthy and to try and contribute to winning baseball. It is literally so easy to say that. It is so easy. And instead he goes, I have answered your questions, so why do you keep picking at it? It's insane. It is insane to me, Anthony Rendon. I can't keep talking about it. It pisses me off so much. It is crazy. It is crazy that this is a real interview. This is like the first day of spring training. This guy, Sam Lum, gave him three opportunities. Is it a top priority for you? Baseball. Is it a priority for you? Do you want to be here? And do you want to be here playing baseball for the Angels? Four separate questions in a row, he gave Anthony Rendon the chance to just give a generic-ass basic answer that fans and the media can just kind of run with and be like, look, Anthony Rendon, he's ready to play. He's going to try and like stay healthy. He's been working on himself. He's ready here. There's a lot to be excited for via the Angels. It's just something that they can run with and be like, yeah, he's back. He's got another crack at it. Let's see what he can do. And at every turn, he's just like, no, I do not care. I'm only here because I'm getting paid and it's a job and I need to feed my family. That's the only reason why I'm here. If you're only here to make a living, go work at a gas station, Anthony Rendon. Just go work at a gas station. You could probably provide for your family doing that too. It's not going to be as luxurious and as comfortable as maybe now because you're making tens of million dollars to play a game that you don't play. But, you know, you'd still probably be able to make a living. You don't have to be a gas station attendant. Go buy like a deli or something. Go buy like a restaurant and be like a restaurateur or something like that. Like do something else, right? Own a diner, own a gas station, invest in something, whatever. You don't have to play baseball, dude. No one's forcing you to play baseball. But you're happy enough to come in, collect your check, and then go down with a season-ending injury after 50 games. It's so obnoxious. It is so obnoxious the way he answered these questions, dude. It is really, it's not cool. It's not okay. It's not acceptable. Okay, something a little less aggravating. A little less aggravating is Giancarlo Stanton. He looks good. He looks good. Not gonna lie. Stanton, my dude, slimmed down. And this obviously all stems from Cashman's offseason comments. So Cashman back in November, I actually wrote about this for Fan Side to Call to the Pen. But Cashman back in November said that Stanton getting hurt basically is something the Yankees have to accommodate for because it's going to happen. And I'm paraphrasing that, but you know, he said in terms of injuries and stuff, it's becoming a bit too much. You know, Stanton gets hurt all the time. It's just something that they have to assume is going to happen, basically, is what Cashman said. And this was back when he was just doing like seemingly every interview under the sun, talking about like what went wrong this season and all this other kind of stuff. And people were kind of like getting pissed at him because it seemed like he was throwing some people under the bus. But even Garrett Cole, in a much nicer sense, said in an interview, I think it was like last week, when Pitchers and Catchers reported, he came in and was just like, you know, we had a lot of holes last year. Our roster definitely got better, but we had some injuries. And bottom line is that we all get injured too much as a unit. Far too many key guys spending time on the IL too many times. And he's right. He's right. A huge thing with the Yankees for the past several years, not even just last year, even when they've been having a good regular season record, it's been injuries. Judge has an injury history. Stanton has an injury history. Rendon was a mess last year. Cortez, a couple years ago, dynamite for the Yankees. Last year, basically spent the entire time on the IL. Zach Britton, who is recently retired, like he had a couple injuries with the Yankees that sucked. Michael King, a couple years ago, had a season-ending injury. He bounced back pretty well last year and was part of the Juan Soto deal. So That's why I really love the Soto deal for the Yankees, is that this is a dude, which you can hear that. That's me knocking on wood. Soto played 162 games last year, every single game for the Padres. And he has been a dynamite player in that regard for his entire career thus far. His very young career. Very, very good baseball player. Still incredibly young, if you can believe it. He's like 25. So he's feels like he's been around forever. But Soto is very durable. He's been very durable. He's been very durable. So that is a huge plus for the Yankees to get someone that they can rely on. I'm going to keep knocking over it every time I say it. So we have the durability issue just as a team, which the training staff, I think they made a couple changes for the training staff. But yeah, it was just like a lot of guys getting injured. And it's not, you know, unlucky stuff. Judge had a couple unlucky ones, like the ligament in his foot from diving into the wall. Like, you're never going to ask Judge to not make that play against the Dodgers. Unfortunate injury. A couple years ago, he got hit in the arm, in the elbow, broke his elbow. He was out several weeks. When he's healthy, he's great. And he was healthy enough last year. He had an injury last year and he missed some time with that foot injury, but he still put together a really good season and played in plenty enough games for the Yankees to be a playoff team if they were good last year, which they weren't, obviously. They had a lot more problems outside of Aaron Judge. And obviously, as soon as he went down, the lineup completely collapsed. Rizzo had the bizarre concussion thing going on after having a good start. Stanton he had the worst year of his career by far. Really, DJ LeMahieu's just been on a constant decline since 2019. Gleyber Torres was really the only bright spot for the Yankees all season long until they brought up a lot of the young guys. Austin Wells was exciting. Volpe was a good rookie. 2020 season as a rookie for Anthony Volpe. You want to see him get that batting average up. But other than that, great defensive shortstop, and he was 2020, so he had good offensive production as a rookie. Obviously, you're not expecting him to hit like 300 as a rookie. That's a crazy ass, because no one hits 300 anymore. So you want to get the batting average up, the OBP up. But other than that, he was good. Loved Anthony Volpe. Bright future for the kid. Jason Dominguez set the world on fire and then got shut down because he tore his UCL. He won't be around till August. Austin Wells probably is going to be the starting catcher. I think, you know, it's going to be tough to beat out Trevino, Jose Trevino, if he's healthy. But I think by like May, Austin Wells is probably going to be the starting catcher. Austin Wells is good. So those young guys came up, kind of inspired life into the Yankees. Like, hey, we're not going to make the playoffs this year, and that sucks, and it's super disappointing. But look at these young guys we got coming up, right? I love Peraza. I think Peraza needs more playing time. I will die on that hill. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right. We'll have to wait. And time will tell, but I think Peraza deserves more playing time. I think Peraza deserves playing time over DJ LeMahieu. I think Peraza getting playing time over DJ is going to be way, 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 way more beneficial for the Yankees than forcing DJ into starting spots. He's a utility guy. He's not the same hitter. He just hasn't been the same hitter. He hasn't been. And he was banged up last year as well, but he hasn't been the same hitter as he was when he first couple seasons for the Yankees. So I would like to see Peraza get some cracks at third base. Volpe's your shortstop. Gleyber's your second baseman. Rizzo's at first. LeMahieu can plug and play at three of those four positions. So that's pretty good. Your outfield is going to be some combination of Soto, Judge, Verdugo, and Grisham. And then when Dominguez comes back, if Dominguez is rehabbing, as soon as Dominguez is fully healthy, I'm plugging him into the lineup, dude. He's proven that he's a beast. But depending on when he gets back, I think they were saying August. We'll see. I don't really know. You know, he's recovering from a UCL injury as well, but he is just going to be the DH for the Dodgers. So it's a little bit different. Dominguez is going to be the center fielder for the Yankees. He needs to be able to throw the baseball. Back to Stanton, though. That's where all this really stems from. He looked good. He slimmed down a lot. Cashman was pretty rude in terms of he was right. He was right. Like what he said about Stanton getting injured all the time, and that's like something that the Yankees have to account for. He's right, which is really sad, but it's true. And a lot of people got on him because they were just like, how can the GM say this about Stanton? Stanton's agent put out, he just put out like a tweet, like a notes app tweet on, I think it was on Twitter. I said tweet, so obviously it was Twitter, but like saying, you know, this, a lot of people should beware if they go to play for the Yankees, because this is how the GM treats players, right? That they're problems because they get injured. And it's tough to blame a guy who gets injured so much, but I've been saying for years, and Yankees fans have been saying for years, Stanton's body was not made, it was not built for baseball. He wasn't building his body for baseball. Whoever his trainer was, whoever, whatever, if it was the Yankees or a personal trainer, whatever, he was simply too big. He's pulling muscles and he's hurting muscle groups that do not affect him as a baseball player. Like, because he's so big and brolic and muscular, he's more susceptible. If he's not working out the right areas, if he's not, if he doesn't have the, he doesn't have the body of a baseball player. He has the body of a football player playing baseball, and that doesn't correlate. You could be the best athlete on a football field. You go to a baseball field and you try and swing a bat more than 10 times, you're going to hurt yourself. Like if you try and swing your bat hard enough to try and keep up with a 90, 95 mile an hour fastball, you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt your back. You're going to hurt your something in your legs, your sides. Your arms, whatever, you're going to hurt something. You're going to pull something. That's what's been happening to Stanton every single year, because he's built like a linebacker. And now he even said, I worked on myself this offseason to slim down. I wanted to be a baseball player again, which was like, it almost brought tears to my eyes. I got so excited when I saw that, because clearly he recognized the problem of just like, he was simply too big. And now he was standing next to Judge, really slimmed down, dude. Like the dry fit shirt was sticking to him and he was lean as hell. So I am very, very, very excited for Giancarlo Stanton this year. He's a key part of the team. Like he needs to contribute. I don't care if he doesn't have to hit 40 home runs. He can hit anywhere between 30 to 30. If he hits 30 home runs, I'm happy. If he hits 30 home runs, I'm happy. If he has 80 plus RBIs, I'm happy. If he plays over 125 games, I'm happy. If he, let's say 130 games, if he plays 130 games, I'm happy. If he hits 250, I'm over the moon. All right. Like he is such an important part of this lineup. And when he's bad, it's just such a vulnerable piece, like just a dude that you're going to go after down and away, down and away, down and away. Stanton's not going to be able to hit it. So now, not only am I happy to see the weight loss for Stanton, that he's a much more leaner, athletic looking man, I hope he changed his batting stance. I haven't seen anything yet. I haven't seen any clips of him taking BP or anything like that yet. Something tells me he's tweaking his mechanics as well. Something tells me he did. Again, we won't see until we start getting some spring training games going on, but I hope he did. Because I think that's contributing to everything too. Just that extreme close stance where he's basically, he doesn't look like he uses his legs. He takes one little shallow step and then flings his hips open and it's all just power, boom. You know, he stops like he's taking a golf. You know how when you're on the green in golf, you have to use like a wedge or something or an iron, and you're not going to follow through the same way you follow through with a driver. Some guys kind of like hold it there at that angle at the end. That's how he swings a baseball bat. Like, he doesn't follow through. That baseball bat isn't hitting his back shoulder, you know, as a full follow through. He's like kind of stopping, and he just has so much power that it's worked for a really long time. So I think that I'd like to see him change his batting stance a little bit. I also think his batting stance is part of the reason why his batting stance and his approach is part of the reason why he can't hit anything down and away. Like, you throw him a slider down and away near the strike zone, he's going to swing over the top of it every single time and he's going to miss. So I just some of those things, I think his body and his approach and his stance and all his mechanics and stuff have all not only attributed to him having severe flaws as a hitter that have been, I think all pitchers have really attacked the past couple years. It also has contributed to his injuries. So now that he's gotten his physicality seemingly in a different direction, I'm hoping it translates for his mechanics and then his output this season. He's a big part of it. Rodon's another guy. Carlos Rodon ended up looking good. I'm going to hold my breath on that one. He, I think, rubbed a lot of people the wrong way last year. That was maybe the worst first year of a contract in the history of baseball. Like, that's, I mean, the Yankees had him, and then Jacoby Ellsbury was, like, that's what people were thinking of. We're like, this is another Ellsbury contract. This, Rodon's not going to throw a single game. Like, it's like more than half a game, half a season for the Yankees. It's going to be horrible. And the thing with Rodon, too, is, like, even when he did pitch, he was bad. So it was just, like, a whole lot of nothing last year. He's going to be a guy that a lot of people are counting on to step up, especially now. There are reports that the Yankees have an offer in for Blake Snell, and a couple other teams are in the mix, but the Yankees do have an offer in. That would be really cool if they signed Blake Snell. They missed out on Yamamoto, and that's why it was kind of like Rodon's going to be, if we didn't get the pitcher we wanted. We got Soto in the trade. That was huge. Didn't get the pitcher we wanted. So now it's like, okay, Rodon's going to, you're going to have to step up. You're going to have to be the guy we're paying you to be, which is a number one caliber player, number one caliber pitcher, like you were in San Francisco. Like, that's what we need. That's what the Yankees need. And if somehow Blake Snell comes aboard, things are infinitely better instantly, because Blake Snell's a beast. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for this season. Gonna watch a couple of the first spring training games just to get a feel of where everyone's at. And specifically, Stanton and Rodon are gonna be two guys under a microscope this spring training for a lot of fans. And before we wrap up, I'm literally went right to Twitter. I'm like, let me see what Stanton looked like today. Hit a rocket to right center field. And he did change his batting stance. His batting stance looked a little bit different. It looks a lot more fluid. So I was right. I was right. I know a little bit about baseball. So I'm happy to see Stanton. There's another video of him, Soto, and Judge in right field. He just looks so much better. Really slimmed down. If we can get Stanton in the field, that would be awesome as well. Just to get him more a part of the game, I think, is really important. But yeah, his stance, it's a little bit different. It looks a little bit more even than it is closed. I saw his hands were up a little bit more, rather than sitting low and having that bat rest on his shoulder. His hands were up a little bit more. The bat sat on his shoulder right before the pitch, but his hands were up a little bit more. So that was pretty interesting to see as well. So I'm excited to see more of Stanton. And yeah, him and Rodon, like I said, going to be under a microscope this season. All right, that'll do it for this episode from my point of view. Thank you all very much for listening. Appreciate you as always. Have a great rest of your week. Great weekend. And I'll talk to you all next Wednesday. I've been recording on Tuesdays, putting out on Wednesdays, other videos and stuff on Instagram. Shall I go Instagram and TikTok? In the description of the episode, if you want to go watch some short clips and stuff. Yeah, that's about that. So I guess, what's today? Tuesday? So I guess we'll talk to you all next Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't know. Whatever. Goodbye.